Welcome back, everyone, to a convenient parallel discussion. We have just gotten started here. Welcome to Eric, who's just joining. So, yes, this is episode 4 already. This is going fast, guys.
Yeah, it
is. So tonight we'll be discussing chapters 7 and 8. Who has something they want to get started with? The Long Winter.
I'll go ahead and start if that's okay.
For sure.
Because the very first sentence of this chapter was immediately right up my alley.
Absolutely.
James, I love that the next thing that gets talked about after the whole Ghostbusters 2 situation is Universal Studios. Yeah, it's my favorite, one of my favorite parts of the fandom. I grew up as a kid. I was in the pre-show, all that good stuff. And I want to touch back to, I think it was our first episode, when we were talking about the studios that were trying to acquire the rights to the movie, and how Columbia eventually, you know, was all set in stone. And then Universal, 2 years later after the sequel, gets the rights to use the movie and the likenesses and all that in the theme parks. So I love that even though there was a lull in movie news, it was still kind of progressing. And even Universal Studios treated it like a movie at first before they did like you were in, like ghosts were real. You were actually on a soundstage at first and they talked about movie history, you know, by even mentioning the actors by name and such. So I thought it was cool that you mentioned that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's I think it was a pretty significant part of the history there, because it, you know, Universal was you know, it was the first real challenge to Disney in Orlando, the Orlando area, and it was like, you're gonna ride the movies. This is gonna be the, you know, we're really, you know, they had Back to the Future and E.T. and all the, you know, everything you would consider at the time like a modern classic, and some of the, you know, some legitimate older classic stuff like Psycho and Earthquake. And, you know, they had a lot of problems. And I think the Ghostbusters Spooktacular is one of the more reliable rides when it first opened. Like everything else was breaking down or not working at all.
Yeah. James, you were from Orlando?
I finished high school and went to college in Orlando. So, yeah, I got to be pretty familiar with the area and the history of the area.
Did you ever get to experience the Ghostbusters ride?
Yeah, I did. I did actually. And I remember, to me, the most incredible part of it was like the, like outdoors, like the speakers that they had that were playing all the music from Ghostbusters. I was like, this is the loudest I've ever heard this stuff. Like, this is incredible. Yeah. And it was like, I guess I feel like I was a little let down because it was like, oh, this is like a stage show, like more or less. It's not like Jaws or, Back to the Future, where it's like you're really something to see. But I think even when I was younger, I understood like Ghostbusters maybe doesn't like lend itself to a ride experience, you know. Mm-hmm. it's going to be this type of thing. But it was also like really incredible to see like the Ektomobile replica, you know. Mm-hmm. And just that corner of the park that made it, that was supposed to look like New York City.
So
I wonder if any of the actual
coming in and saying
show actually made it, like if they're sitting in someone's collection or sitting at Universal's back lot or tucked away in someone's backyard or something like that.
Some of it has gotten out over the years. I feel like there was a pack on eBay. I know there's been some various props that Eric has even been aiming to add to his collection at times, like jackets and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I know one of the guys, or one of the Ectos, is actually sold to someone in New Jersey that they use that Spooktacular. I saw the Spooktacular when I was 4 years old.
Yeah,
how many is that?
Four. James saw it. Josh saw it. Who else?
I did. Yeah.
Eric saw it. I think that might be it.
I watched it on YouTube. Does, our other members have. Does watching it on YouTube count?
No.
No, okay. No, you got to ride the movies.
I remember just like looking up at it because it was like there was like the stage and it was just like this glass like in front of you, and that's how they used like all the lights and whatnot, like
because it was a lot of the like Pepper's Ghost effect sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They like projected stuff onto the glass.
Yeah, it was really cool, like how they did it. And because it gave like the ghosts like the transparency.
Yeah.
Like see through them. I remember that pretty well.
I got to do Halloween Horror Nights a couple of years ago, if that counts. But
yeah, I'm going to give you a pass on that one. That one counts.
All right.
Yeah, I think I had to remember a little bit. I went to Universal Studios in '98 and that Disney thing for a family trip, and I had to look it up when Spooktacular closed in '96. I was 96. Like, oh, all right, I missed it.
You know, the thing was, though, they closed the ride in '96, but then they kept the franchise in like the most minimal way possible for like another 4 or 5 years.
Oh,
they still had the Ecto that toured around.
Yeah.
In 97, 98, they had a small version of Extreme Ghostbusters. They had a Kylie with the shoulder pads.
Well, you kind of have to have a Kylie. Kylie, come on.
Yeah. But it was just Kylie and then a cowboy. Well, there was
wasn't it like a boy band show?
Yeah, they had that too. That was was an evolution from before, because it used to be the four boys in gray and then Beetlejuice. Mm-hmm. And then they had, you know, a dance show with him. And then as years went by, they were now wearing bright neon jumpsuits, like a pink, a neon green, an orange, and a purple. And it was almost YMCA-ish. There was a cowboy, there was a nerd, there was all sorts of stuff.
It was the Ghost Backstreet Boys.
James, did you try to get a hold of who is it that
Wayne Brady.
Did you try to get a hold of Wayne Brady for to interview him about his experience?
I did not. You know, Wayne Brady, though, his legend looms large over Central Florida. And I knew like I couldn't go too deep into the theme park stuff. I didn't want to get too far away from everything, the movies, but I felt like it had to be talked about a little, you know, and I'm not sure how, maybe for the next edition, I'll get a hold of Wayne Brady.
It's got such a weird history. Because I've made it a point to reach out to anybody from Landmark Entertainment I could get my hands on and talk to about it. And the stories I've heard, my God, the technical issues, the labor issues, also. It's got a little crazy history to it.
So with this chapter, this was like the dawning of the internet. So this is where all the rumors really blew up. I remember checking Proton Charging every single day, reading the latest news, logging on to America Online Dialogue.
Oh, yeah. And all the message boards. I met plenty of people on those message boards that I still talk to this day. That was definitely an interesting period to live through. And obviously, you know, like when Ghostbusters3.com came online, but it redirected you to Sony's website. I remember checking that not only daily, I was checking that like hourly to be like, does it actually redirect to something Ghostbusters now? But yeah, that like, I mean, yeah, The Long Winter, that's a very appropriate title for this.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
And just how many different things, you know, I think most people sort of, obviously Bill was always kind of Bill in terms of coming back to it or revisiting it, but I think the majority of fans really kind of attribute it to the falling out on Groundhog Day, which, you know, it obviously that's been talked about a ton, but that's really such a shame, because aside from Ghostbusters, just the number of projects that could have happened, or that different combinations of these of the Ghostbusters family could have worked worked on together, had it not been for that, is really, you know, limitless. And it's a shame for what happened, especially for how beloved of a movie that ended up being. You know, you would think if they were going to have such a fight, it would be over a movie that tanked, not over something that is beloved.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, so, I mean, obviously there was that. Then Extreme Ghostbusters, you know, we did our rewatch on our site back during COVID, and that was way ahead of its time. Like, that was so underappreciated for what it was. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, they talked about it. I think it was one of the producers that, you know, the show being in syndication rather than on a network obviously hurt it terribly. But, you know, some of the storylines in that, they were darker, they were edgier for a cartoon. I mean, I still remember rewatching it, and on episode 2 or 3, they're dealing with an anti-Semitism storyline.
Yeah.
I was just like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, Extreme Ghostbusters did this?
Extreme.
And I mean, yeah, Extreme is the perfect title. That is so nice.
When I first saw it on TV, it was like 7 o'clock in the morning, getting ready for school. I'm like, what? This is a thing? Mm-hmm. Watch that first episode, and then of course could never catch it because, you know, I had to go to school. It was always on at the weirdest times too.
I remember. Do you guys remember Disney Adventures, the magazine?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Short book. I remember. You know, I had a subscription to it, and all of a sudden there was this paragraph. It must have been a one sentence blurb with the logo, right, the classic logo right next to it, saying that a new show was coming. And
did it call it Super Ghostbusters?
As a matter of fact, it still had Extreme. It had Extreme, so it was past that point.
Yeah.
But thank God that name change happened.
Oh, God. I mean, for as much flack as people, I remember people giving Extreme Ghostbusters flack of like, oh, everything's so 90s, everything's so extreme. But if it would have been called Super Ghostbusters, that just would have been horrible.
Yeah. I mean, right in the first two episodes, I mean, they had to go extreme because the old proton pack couldn't take on these baddies. So they had to upgrade. They had to step it up a notch. They had to go extreme. I mean,
and upgraded Ghostbusters didn't test well as a button.
We need it more.
But I mean, that voice cast, like, I love hearing that they actually enjoyed hanging out with each other and recording. Because, I mean, you know, Jason Marsden, Tara Strong, Alfonso Ribeiro, they were all awesome. Like,
I mean, Tara Strong, obviously she was still kind of brand new to the game.
Yeah. Jason and her both have huge careers at this point.
And Alfonso too, because he was starring in Fresh Prince at that point.
Yeah. Yep. And Jason was on Boy Meets World.
Yep.
Yep. And Step by Step.
Yes, on that too.
Jason, one of the voices of a Goofy movie.
Yes.
Yes, he is Max Goofy.
But not the singing. And speaking of singers, how about Jim Cummings? Tigger himself doing the theme song.
I just learned that he did that in the past couple years. I learned that he did that. I didn't even know. Because somebody told me, Jim Cummings did that. I was like, what? Winnie the Pooh?
Hey.
Right?
Hey.
Tigger too?
That's what he's known for, is Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah. He's Disney's go-to guy for every voice.
Alrighty.
Nothing like Ray Parker Jr. waiting till the absolute last second to give him the okay to be able to record that.
Right. That is very Ray Parker Jr.
They wanted too much money. So who got Extreme Ghostbuster toys Christmas that year when it came out and they had the toys coming out? Who got toys as a teenager?
I remember going and buying some on my own. I don't think.
I went and bought a bunch of them, and then for Christmas I got the deluxe ones, with the extra extreme packs that light up.
Extra extreme.
I remember calling Toys R Us and asking them if they had any new Ghostbusters toys, and whoever was on the phone with me was like, "Dude, they haven't released new Ghostbusters toys in like 10 years." I was like, "No, they are though, right now."
That was my senior year of high school. So
you were working at Toys R Us. You're who I talk to.
No. I wish I was working at Toys R Us. I was working at a skating rink. So
there's some younger viewers on now being like, what's a Toys R Us?
Oh, that's so sad.
No. They might know of Toys R Us.
We have a viewer right now from Ghostbusters Ecuador. So how about that?
Ecuador, awesome. Pretty nice.
Nice. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you.
Obviously Extreme Ghostbusters. That was, and then there's all the different Ghostbusters 3 scripts, and it's so funny to hear more about those because we all obviously were clamoring for news and checking all these sites and everything when we were teenagers or 30 years old in David's case. the initial treatment of Ghostbusters 3. I'm sorry, New Jersey is heaven. Who thought that was a good idea?
Maybe Kevin
Smith. He's never been to Jersey. Maybe I'm Kevin sorry Smith? To people in Jersey. But
you know, I'll say Kevin Smith.
I mean, the devil, his name was just Ron Lucifer.
Like,
all right, we're not putting too much thought into it. Just give him a first name and Lucifer.
Was that like maybe a precursor to Ron Burgundy? I'm just saying. Like, hey, wait a minute.
There you go.
That's Lucifer a stretch.
Is going to be Ron. Hey, let's make a Ron. No, I don't know.
I mean, obviously, all the casting rumors and everything.
I like that original, like the original idea, like you know, Chris Farley being Ray's kid, and I'm like, okay,
nephew.
Yeah. I was like, okay, like I was kind of like, okay, this could be pretty interesting. This could be pretty fun, but sadly, it never happened. But I mean, obviously. Yep. Dan enjoyed working with Chris.
I'm gonna say the closest we got was Tommy Boy at the end in the elevator sequences and
Ray Zelinsky.
Ray Zelinsky.
So that's probably where you get the Ray from,
I mean that's probably the kind of interaction like maybe Ray would have been a little more professional now and Chris Farley would have been pretty much like kind of like in Black Sheep. That he's like, I'm kind of embarrassed by him, but I love him kind of thing.
So am I right on the timeline, James? Was Tommy Boy kind of one of the experiences that made Dan Aykroyd consider not retiring?
Yeah, I think so. I think he started getting recognized by kids on the street as Ray Zelinsky.
Generation.
Right. He was sort of like, I think I'll keep going. And I mean, but obviously, I think, there's probably also the motivating factor of like, he's in control of like a couple important franchises. I want to do another Blues Brothers. I want to do another Ghostbusters. But I'm sure it's weird. I feel like he just had a few years where he was having some self-doubt because I found an interview he did while he was shooting Coneheads where he was like, I can't do this much longer. I can't remember my lines and I'm so tired at the end of every day. So it was like, he probably did work,
That was crazy. Another movie with Chris Farley.
Yeah.
He was dating Dan's daughter in that movie. Obviously I think the Ghostbuster cast, appreciated Farley. I mean, Farley was in Airheads with Ernie. Harold was in that one, if I'm right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was. He was a negotiator, I think.
Yeah.
He was there. He was like one of the record label guys. He goes up and he goes, "You guys are the hottest things since Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch."
Funny thing to point out that eventually Alyssa Milano, who was in Coneheads with both of them, would come back into the fold with the video game later on, lending her voice to Alyssa.
Yep.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Obviously, then the information.
Brief cameo ahead, of Casper.
Oh, the Casper.
Yeah, that wasn't mentioned, James.
Oh, no, this is an interesting story about that Casper cameo. So, like, I wanted to interview the two women who wrote Casper about that specifically, obviously. And I was like, I the world needs to know everything about how this happened and why this happened. And so I emailed their representation, their agent or their manager, and that person was like, oh, my God, they would love to talk to you about this. They would love to. Let me just ask them. So then she asked them, and then they get in touch with me. They're like, hey, we don't have anything to say about this. It's just a silly joke. There's really nothing beyond that.
Okay.
I said, can I quote you on that? They said, no.
Of course.
Great.
Okay.
Well, that explains why that was omitted.
Right. I'm kind of surprised that Sony let that happen, because I think that's a universe. I'm kind of surprised that Sony kind of let that. I was like, let that happen.
I remember seeing that in the theater.
I'm kind of surprised that. Oh my God, that's Ray Stantz. What is going on here? And I think it was even the same proton pack sound and everything that was coming from Whipstaff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, how did that even happen? Like, I have no idea. Like, Sony never really lets anything happen like that, or, you know, studios, I should say, they don't cross over like that. And I'm now thinking about it, like, wow.
Now we're gonna have to watch the credits just to see special things to Sony just for that.
Yep.
I think Casper was originally a Filmation cartoon as well, so that just
it was ties
like, more. Yeah. Mm. Whoa. So, like, all mind these blown.
Oh, it's getting heavy.
All who these cross sections.
Or the Ghostbuster franchise at that time, wasn't it Ivan, Harold, Murray, and Acura? Didn't they have, like, a controlling interest in that franchise, or did Sony own it all? Or Columbia, actually?
Columbia had a piece of it, but they were the ones who always had to sign off on whatever was happening.
Yeah.
So... But it's entirely possible they just did that and said, we'll worry about the rights later. And then, like, you know, is someone really going to raise hell because Dana heard
the cast and was like, what the hell? I didn't sign off on this.
I would be surprised if Bill Murray even knew they made a Casper movie.
So, I would agree with you on that.
Let alone Dan being in it very briefly.
Yeah.
Are you gonna remember seeing that scene as a kid and being like, Ghostbusters wouldn't run away?
Yeah, it is. That
he's
is
not
like
supposed
a
to be afraid of that.
Fundamental character flaw.
It goes back to extreme Ghostbusters. Never go solo.
I was going to say. I think it happened in. I want to say something in the IDW comics or something like that. They mentioned about someone doing something solo up in Maine.
It was a little throwback, you know.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I get it. I get that joke.
Nice.
It was three against one with him. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah. And he had a broken proton gun. Because when he comes back,
and a mustache.
So, obviously, then moving into the other Ghostbusters 3 drafts of everything, he's more cleverly, the devil is more cleverly named Lou Siffler now. So, at least it's not just.
Hey, Lou. Hey.
You know, I think I've mentioned, I forget if it was when we were in the podcast or maybe just one of our chats outside of it, that I have been reading the draft that's available on Spook Central. And it is a tough read. It is a lot of techno babble, it's very wordy. The characters just aren't that interesting. They don't jump off the page, which I think is so interesting that people kind of ragged on Extreme Ghostbusters for being like too politically correct or whatever in the way that they dealt with having a lot of different representation. But these characters, I just don't, find them that interesting.
And that's substance.
Been, yeah, definitely. You know, like, why is there a 10-year-old in charge?
Yeah, that was kind
of
weird.
I get he's super smart and has a big brain, actually a big cranium, I think it is.
It sounds like a bad 80s cartoon.
Well, and I mean, in that vein, the fact that they turned Venkman's love potion joke from Ghostbusters 2 into the cause of his death.
Yeah.
like, oh, he was really obsessed with making that potion a reality. Like, why?
Bill requested it.
I mean, I know he requested to be killed off, but they couldn't come up with something better.
Love than that. Killed Venkman in the end.
It was beauty killed Bill.
One of these days, I will finish that script. You know, I'm going away this weekend. Maybe I'll read that to finish that up.
If you're
it's so funny. I there you go. But no, I genuinely find it very funny that, you know, through the long winter and through the 90s, as a teenager, I was dying for this movie to happen. And now that I'm reading the script, I'm like, oh, thank God this didn't happen.
I remember seeing my dad was a big Blues Brothers fan, so he bought the DVD, and I'm looking at the special features and like the credits, and I see Dan Aykroyd's, and it says Ghostbusters 3 on it, and I think I was like 10 years old or 11 years old, and I was like, Mom, Dad, you guys got to see this. It says Ghostbusters 3. It's happening. It's happening. And it did not happen.
And you were crushed.
It did not happen for at least another 24 years.
That was some intern just went to his IMDb page to create that graphic, and it said like pre-production or something, and they just
let me just mess put it with on everybody there. Real quick.
Right? Or yeah, it was somebody that was doing it on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Hey, maybe also, if we throw that in there, we'll garner enough interest, and then maybe it'll happen then. Yeah.
It was also on the 1941 DVD.
Oh, was it?
Was it? Nice.
That's where I saw it first.
Oh.
So
was it like a coming soon special feature?
Was it?
Was it like a what's coming soon special feature? Or?
No, it was like here's Dan Aykroyd's filmography. Here's all the movies he's been in case you've forgotten or you can't get to a computer. And it's like, it lists all of his stuff and then it said Ghostbusters 3, 1998. Oh, okay. I guess I missed it.
I do appreciate that you brought up Evolution and that was actually one of my favorite movies as a kid.
I was going to say, what did everybody think of Evolution? Like, I enjoyed it.
I thought it was very underrated.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, but definitely, you know, you could definitely tell it felt like it was using the template of Ghostbusters to a certain extent.
Definitely. It felt a lot like Ghostbusters 2.
It was enjoyable, though. You know, it wasn't like, it wasn't.
Well, cringe. even to the point that I do remember, you know, the rumors of it being like a repurposed Ghostbusters 3 script, like you mentioned, Jane.
Yeah. I mean, Evolution is definitely like charming, and it's I like the chemistry between David Duchovny and the other characters. However,
I love Orlando Jones in it.
Yeah,
Orlando, thank you.
I couldn't, everything.
However, when my wife and I watched it recently, we were kind of like, they're trying really hard to like make catchphrases out of terrible sentences. And like, now we have like, my wife and I have a joke now where, you know, I'll be like, oh, classic movie lines. Like, I want my shirts back, Denise. But yeah, I was very curious. And it wasn't the people, the two gentlemen who wrote Evolution, or wrote the screenplay for it, rather, were a couple of the first people I interviewed for the book, and they were like, yeah, no, it was just adapted from this other story and blah, blah, blah.
Well, you know, for Evolution, I think the posters or the DVD actually said from the makers of Ghostbusters.
Yep.
And then there was a variation with Ghostbusters and Road Trip.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they were literally bringing as much attention to that aspect as they could.
Well, and how about the fact that it actually came out on the 17th anniversary of Ghostbusters? I had no idea on that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But, it was a fun movie. I will say, you know, from there, we kind of jump into the video game and the production of that. And that was all super interesting. I loved this part of the book. Maybe it's because I love that video game so much. but
I still have like, it on PlayStation, the, you know, in my computer.
That's the sole reason that I bought a PlayStation 3. I'm not much of a gamer, but when, you know, all those preview images and everything were coming out and it was like, okay, the PlayStation 2 is getting the more cartoony version and the more realistic graphics will be on the PS3. I was like, I'm buying a PS3 then. I did the same thing with Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed. I was like, I guess I need a PlayStation 5 now.
Yeah, I remember going to GameStop and buying, like, putting my pre-order in. And the manager, and I was asking him, hey, when do you guys get any promotional stuff for it? He's like, actually, here's a t-shirt, and he handed me an Ecto-1B keychain.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. I actually got the promotional box from GameStop. My buddy was the assistant manager at the time. So there was a shoe box that had a polo in it with the nice embroidered logo. Like lanyards meant to be given out to all the employees, a demo disc they were supposed to have playing around in one of the TVs in the back, a license plate replica, and an Ecto-1 keychain like that, and some letters and flyers and stuff. It was amazing. And I actually went to, it was Game Crazy, a couple of other different places too. And I went and collected as many promo items because every place had something different.
Yeah. You know, I remember buying a bunch of it on eBay after the fact.
Yep. There were stress balls that you could only get at Game Crazy. There were keychains you could only get at San Diego. There was lip balm given away at San Diego.
And you were like, I need the Ghostbusters, the video game lip balm.
Yep.
I want my lips to smell like marshmallows.
Yep. And that's what it was. It was marshmallow. I started off, I got the Wii version first. I had the stylized version. And it was fun. I mean, I didn't get to play the 360 one until maybe a year or two later because my brother actually had an Xbox. My younger brother had an Xbox 360. I talked him into buying the Slimer edition that came with the statue and all that stuff. I split it with him right down the middle. I took all the giveaways. And then eventually I ended up getting the game from him. You know, he was like, I'm not playing it anymore. Well, I said, okay, I'll take it.
Believe it or not, it's still available on Epic Game Store, the remastered version. They still have it available for PC. And still
available. So, fun story for me. I actually went to New York Comic Con solely to play the demo of the game. Like, that was my only reason for driving to New York and going,
oh, wow.
Was that the Activision demo?
Yeah. Yeah, so I got to play. What I got to play was like in the game. It was when you blast the puffed minions in the high rise. But fun fact is that day, right after that, is the first time that I ever went to Hook and Ladder 8 in uniform.
Nice.
Wow.
So that's a fun little experience connected to the video game.
Yeah, we're all when we talk about the video game.
We all call it the video game when it was originally going to be called Ghostbusters 3. Yep.
Until they realized that how marketable it was going to be, and Sony was like, maybe we are going to make a movie.
and you know, I still say, you know, the video game, but when you look at it, it's like, man, this is the third movie. So I didn't know that it was going to be called Ghostbusters 3 until I read this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
same here.
I mean, I'm going to throw a hot take out there. To me, Ghostbusters video game still, I mean, Spirits Unleashed is a great game and all. There's so much you can do in there, but the video game, you were along with the guys. You were part of the team. You were there with them. Still
the cinematics. That's still
an immersive experience to me as someone who never got to go to, you know, Universal to experience that. I mean, to me, that's as a fan, that was and still is like I will periodically play it a couple times a year. Still.
Oh, same. Yeah.
I mean,
it's replay value. Hearing
the voices, especially since Harold's no longer with us. You know, it still has the same feeling, the same vibe, and you know, to blast marshmallow minions along with, you know, Venkman and Ray and Winston. I mean, there's nothing that compares to that. So,
yeah, I just wish they would have kept that movie as continuity and canon.
Yeah,
and
what killed me reading was like how Activision, you know, Atari and Activision really were not doing any promoting for it. Like they weren't they're like, oh, no, no.
It still sold a million copies.
Yeah.
Because I remember buying like a computer, the first computer version of it, the PC version from Atari, for years ago. But to hear that they never even wanted it to begin with, it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy that Activision, a huge gaming creator, gets bought by another company. Yeah. And then that company is like, yeah, we're not going to do Ghostbusters. Well, we're done.
I love the little bit that James put in there, how he pointed out that Atari and Activision technically were the ones who put out the first version of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I have something here.
Nope.
Uh-oh. He's up.
He's got to grab something. What's he got? Oh, boy.
I remember playing that. My cousins had that game on their Commodore.
Floppy disk.
You played it.
I have the original game.
Wait.
In the Activision sleeve.
Wow. Nice.
What is that?
Oh, he Justin, has to ask.
This that is Josh, a 5 1/4 inch floppy disk.
Go sit in the corner, Josh.
Josh, go
watch. I've never always seen another one.
Josh,
I mean, you guys will.
Go watch
the movie War Games after this. I've never seen that version.
Josh, go watch the movie War Games and you'll understand what this is, okay?
You know, it's funny. Remember,
in the 90s, the world could be saved by one disc.
Yes.
Yep. That is the old version of a 3D printed save icon.
No, that's not that. That's something completely different.
Yeah.
Wow. Your mind is blown.
A friend,
forget the book. He's done. He's done.
A friend of mine offered this to me he's like, well, you're a Ghostbusters fan. I'll give it to you. Give me $10. I was like, sure.
Josh is going to scour the internet to buy one now.
Yep. He already has
so it. I found computer it kind to play of it poetic. I found it kind of poetic, though, that they asked pretty much everybody, but that they asked Rick Moranis, and obviously he was retired. But I loved that he said, you know, he wrote them a note and he said, if I was going to come out of retirement for something, this would be it. And then I just kind of love that in the game, Lewis is represented by a small little note on his computer, like went homesick. I just think that's a little bit poetic. It's kind of cool. Yeah.
Yep. You know, it's funny with the theme of the long winter and the video game, you can't help but remember the Zootfly video.
Oh, yeah. That came out. Well, I believe that's what was being referenced at the start of this.
I think so.
With the military aspect and the destruction. And I love how excited the developers were when talking about that. And like the room went silent for 10 seconds when they were like, what if we applied this technology and this gaming into Ghostbusters? And it's like, uh-oh, do they not like it? And they're like, we love this. Are you kidding?
I did hear a interesting Easter egg on a different podcast, maybe last week or so. During one of the final battles, when you're up in the architecture office, there is a tiny little office model in a corner. That corner is actually the building of the developers were in.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
If you go up to it, there's all kinds of weird sounds that come out of it.
And obviously, you know, there's all the casting drama of trying to get everybody. I loved the line from the head guy that was like, you know, we don't have a ton of money, but you can have as many plane tickets as you want to make this happen to get the original cast together.
Yeah.
But like, imagine if we got Vince Vaughn as Magnum. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
They were even thinking of that. I'm just like, oh God.
Was it going to be Vince Vaughn as Bankman, or like when the way that I read that, was it going to be Vince Vaughn as Bankman or Vince Vaughn as another character?
No, it was going to be Vince Vaughn as Bankman.
Okay. No, that's
that would be as weird as if they got Dave Coulier to voice him.
Well,
okay then.
But I mean, talk about an interesting trade-off too. And I love the gimmick to get Brian Doyle Murray as the mayor in order to try to get the connection to Bill. But I mean, I think everybody would make this trade every day of the week that we've lost David Margulies as the mayor one more time in order to get Bankman. And I think everybody's fine with that. But it's just so interesting having never heard that and only played the game, but then realizing that they intended for that to be David Margulies and to have him back again. It would have been cool to see Lenny one more time.
Yeah.
Yep. And Bill actually won an award for the game.
Yeah.
Did he?
He won best performance by a male or something. It was a Spike TV award.
Spike TV. So
44% of his life.
Yep.
Recorded. He won an award for that.
Brian was in part two as the psychologist when they're in the psych ward.
So. He was just nominated. Yeah. I'm sorry. He was nominated. He didn't win. Yeah. He was nominated.
Okay. But I did find that funny too, how the story kind of goes in the production of the first movie, how they were kind of just keeping lines onto Bill. Everybody just kept giving him more to do because he was at the top of his game and everything. And then sort of like you just said, Josh, Bill only recorded 40%, so everybody else had to step up and take on more lines for this.
And then how he was like, I'll just finish him next month. No, we're releasing next month.
No, that's when it ships. And then, you know, when they were talking about having his other brother, Joel, do his recordings to just like get it done. And they told Bill that, and he was like, will I still get paid? And they're like, no. And he's like, all right, fine, I'll show up.
Will I still get paid?
It was like pulling teeth with him to get him to do the game. And then he did it, but then he kind of did it, you know, kind of half-assed.
No, and he then, didn't do it half-assed. He did it 40% ass.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember if I put this in the book, but the guy I interviewed, the guy who spearheaded El John, Melchior, I think is how you pronounce his name. Melchior? He was like, we were really surprised when he went on David Letterman and was talking about what a fun time he had making the video game, because it sure didn't seem like he had a good time.
And then he would do another one?
Yeah.
That was such a bittersweet end to this chapter, like reading John talk about how he wanted to try to do a sequel and that, Bill offhandedly mentioned it on Letterman. But just, I mean, I so wish we got a sequel.
Yeah,
it is so much fun.
If we had gotten a sequel, we would have gotten another movie sooner.
I'll agree.
One thing I really loved about that part is the part where you wrote how Harold and Dan called the game creator's wife to say, hey, don't worry, we'll make sure that he's recognized and everything. Don't worry, we're going to, you know, do right by him. And to me, that just speaks volumes of how Harold and Dan were just so just upstanding, and you know, they can see someone who really was passionate about it, and like, don't worry, we're gonna make sure you get your recognition after all this stuff.
Yeah I mean, this guy was like, he's like, the reason I got into video games is to make a Ghostbusters game. You know, and so he worked on the Simpsons game, Simpsons Hit and Run, and he was like, I asked him what was tougher, working on Ghostbusters or Simpsons, and he kind of made it sound like it was a draw. He's like, Simpsons was tough. So, you know, this guy, he really put in his, seems like he put in his blood, sweat, and tears for everything, you know, especially Ghostbusters. So, yeah.
Can't pronounce his last name, but thank you, John. We all appreciate the game that you put so much hard work in.
And I mean, to shoot a shot the way he did to get Bill, though, I'm like,
incredible.
You kind of have to go all out. Now, as I'm reading that part, when you know about like Brian's asking, well, you're doing this. Do you roll the red carpet out for everyone like this, or is I'm going to go tell my brother?
Yeah, everybody.
Don't worry about it.
And it's funny to imagine Brian Doyle Morey's voice. Like, you know, he's got that like cranky guy. Like, you do this for everybody.
I love how he didn't let it go. He asked once in the meeting, and then he's like, so this was to get me to get my brother to do it, right? And it's like, all right, fine. And he's like, well, it's a good game, I'll ask him.
And then even having like any recollection of like being asked, and then later on saying she would do it, but they're like, we're so far along, we can't add you.
I do remember that part of the story. It's interesting that Sigourney doesn't, and obviously I wasn't privy to conversations or anything, but I just have heard through internet rumors the whole thing of, you know, she said no, and then once everybody was back together, she was like, oh, I'd actually like to do it. But they had already moved on, sort of not recast Dana, but sort of gave what was almost certainly her role, you know, to the Alyssa character.
But I think it was good. We, you know, we can't like keep on rehashing Dana Barrett being the victim of all these.
Agreed.
Yeah. A new character is what was needed.
Yeah.
But yeah. Would it have been interesting if Dana would have been a Shandor descendant? And then that would have explained a bit more why she was always being targeted.
Yep. Yes.
Yep. But, you know, it's also funny because you think about how Shandor was portrayed in Afterlife. And when you get a chance to see the portrait of Shandor on the island,
oh yeah,
it's almost it's like they could, here's my homework. Don't copy exactly.
You know? Yeah, they look similar. They definitely do.
And you know, the whole look was great.
Maybe Alyssa is like a second or third cousin to Dana. You know, who knows? Maybe things tie up together. You never know.
No. So then Viggo would have been part Shandor. Yeah. If you end up,
I kind of like Alyssa as who she is on her own, you know, being a Shandor and Dana being Dana. Like I like it being two separate characters.
No, but, agreed for sure.
Yeah,
but anything else on the video game or the long winter? This was a little bit shorter.
Or, you know, Bill, a.k.a. the Night King.
No, I mean, these chapters touched on a lot of great points and a lot, you know, struck personally for me because it's, you know, not until I was a freshman in high school that I discovered the original Ghostbusters.net forums.
And
Chad had that whole platform and then Proton Charging, GB fans. It was the first time that I realized I'm not alone in liking this fandom. Growing up, you know, I was that kid. I was at every flea market, every garage sale. I thought, you know, I'm the biggest Ghostbusters fan around. Later on down the road, I discovered there's like six franchises in my state. So
I remember
somebody in Florida is probably even scared her, but
discovering GB fans and going through the forums, looking at all the different builds of the Ecto builds and seeing the Arizona Ghostbusters car being built and all the steps. Later on, I'm like, yeah, Jeff, remember being like, when you guys built the car, I remember seeing all that on GB fans and thinking how cool that was.
James, sort of brief period in there that wasn't touched on. I'm just curious if there were any interviews or interview requests. Did you reach out at all to the creators of the 88 Miles Per Hour comic book series?
I didn't. And, you know, I felt bad because I wanted to get into the comic book stuff. But on top of everything else, I felt like, you know, I just couldn't, I knew that if I started, I wouldn't be able to give it what it deserved, you know, because I know the comic books are so important to a lot of people, a lot of fans, and I didn't want to do something that felt just like, I'm just jamming this in here at the end to get it in here, or like shortchange it, because those, they are like, you know, scripture to a lot of people, and like deservedly so. So I was like, I had to make a call, like, I just think I'll have to leave it out and, like, you know, take whatever abuse people give me for being like, you didn't mention the comic books at all. It's like, you know.
No abuse intended.
With 88 Miles Per Hour, can you even get a hold of the creator? Because his company basically went bankrupt and he kind of took the fandom for a bunch of money. Get all those pre-orders for the graphic novel.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, it was like I definitely had my work cut out for me, even with people who seemed to be like very like, listen, John, who spearheaded the video game, was awesome when I got him on the phone finally. It took a very long time. Between him agreeing and our actual conversation for the interview took a super long time. And it was like I just had to be patient and hang in there, you know, but with everything else that I'm juggling, you know, and it's like, yeah, I can't even imagine, like, And it was so tough to stay on top of, like, yeah, like, I know I got to reach out to this person again, or I got to do this, or like, I got to follow up with this person. Cause sometimes I'd interview people like 2 or 3 times because something would come up in later and I'd be like, oh God, I totally forgot to, you know, touch on this, you know? So, and also sometimes, you know, and I felt like I felt bad even putting in the extreme Ghostbuster stuff. I felt like I could go so much further, in much further detail about this. I could give this more time or explore this a little bit more just based on some of the stuff these people were telling me. And like, I could see like there were interesting dynamics between the creative people where it's like, oh, this would be fascinating, I bet, for like super fans of Extreme Ghostbusters, you know, but
yeah, I do like how you compared Ivan Reitman directing Private Parts to the raunchiness of Animal House, yeah, going back to that. Yep. And then anytime Howard Stern does talk about Ivan Reitman, he talks so highly about him. He gave a very touching tribute for when Ivan died, mm-hmm, on his show. So
yeah, it was funny to read that. Yeah, reading reviews of the stuff Ivan Reitman was producing from that era, because you think, like, you know, I mean, I think old school is funny. I think, you know, I have appreciation for a lot of that stuff, but people are like, this guy's starting to retread his own stuff. He's like, what's he doing? He's, you know, they're kind of being pretty harsh with him. But
Draft Day gets such a big, like, people talk about it negatively, but when I watch it, I'm a huge football fan. It's really interesting to see what Ivan and Joe Medjuk did for that movie and getting the rights to the NFL stuff, mm-hmm, logos and team names and things like that. I'm like, man, this movie is actually, that movie is one of Ivan Reitman's, to me, hidden gems.
Oh, it's a great one.
Yep. Late Chadwick Boseman in that too.
I didn't realize he was a producer of Space Jam, which you mentioned.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah. Yeah, I heard that reminds me of a very funny situation where I was interviewing a couple of people who had worked on Ghostbusters who also worked on Space Jam. And I interviewed them like both together, like at a Starbucks or something. And one guy starts telling me about, like, oh, there was this scene from Space Jam that we cut out. And he's going into great detail about it. And then the other guy's like, you can't tell him that. No, this is all off the record. You can't tell anybody about this. I was like, okay. And it seemed like a very innocuous thing. But I was like, no Space Jam secrets. We must keep a lid on this.
Were they planning on putting it in Space Jam too?
The scene that was described to me was not in Space Jam 2. Oh, I can tell you that. No.
Maybe it'll be in Space Jam 3, The Search for More Money.
You know, Ivan, you know, was also the executive producer on a movie I can quote a million times, I Love You, Man. You know, with Paul Rudd.
Slap of the Bass.
You know, Slap of the Bass. Yep. The Lou Ferrigno scenes alone.
What was everybody's was thought on Nothing But the Trouble
Baywatch movie?
Or Vulcanhynia, whatever the other title was. Vulcanvania.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Nothing, what was everybody's thought on that movie?
For Nothing But Trouble, that, yeah, and its weird original title.
I will still watch that movie.
Oh, yeah,
which,
I love it.
Which was the name of the town or county that he presided over.
Yep. Yeah.
Honestly, it's a guilty pleasure watch for me. I get a kick out of it every time. I mean, Chevy Chase, Demi Moore,
John Candy.
Well, yeah, John Candy. I mean, him and Dan played multiple parts in that movie. And I mean, when I was reading that it was going to be more, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it could have been a lot darker.
Yeah.
You know, and
I've never seen it.
Oh. I mean, you're not necessarily missing a lot, but I mean, it's
homework time.
I mean,
no, I have to disagree. You're missing something. You're missing something that must be experienced.
Must be
underground.
Humpty Hump like, the underground with a very unknown Tupac in the background.
Yep. I still got that on my iPod.
I'll have to give this a shot before the end of the podcast with a few more episodes.
You know, it's funny because
now I want to be able to give an opinion on it.
Dan's character, the judge, actually ends up making an appearance. Well, as when he's playing the judge, he actually ends up in the IDW comics.
I have seen that.
It's one of the ghosts that they try and catch.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Those comics were great for so many Easter eggs. Because they had the McKenzie brothers were in it.
And, like, they've even put fans in there.
What's that?
They've put, like, you know, various fans in there at different times and stuff. Mm-hmm. Who, the writers and the creators of that, Dan Shaining and Eric Burnham, have done a fantastic job, or did a fantastic job with that series. But I guess that's about a good spot to wrap it up for this week. So we will not be on next week, everyone. We'll have a 1 week delay for an episode for a very good reason. James's son is turning 18. So he needs to do some fatherly fun with his son and have a good time. But we will return on Sunday, August 20th. And then Sunday, August 27th, we will finish up the last two chapters of the book. We hope you've been enjoying a convenient parallel discussion. Thanks again, James, for joining us. Thank you to Eric of the Boogly Fan Club, Buffalo Ghostbusters, all of you guys. Good job once again. See you guys in 2 weeks.
See ya.
All right, see you guys later.